Amy from Stonemaier Games, and I am here today on September the 8th to do as I usually do every Wednesday. I am here to talk about Stonemaier Games news, to discuss random topics, and to answer any questions you have as long as they're not spoiler questions. So, spoiler questions today would be questions about the Tapestry expansion, the Viticulture expansion, the next Wingspan expansion, all that kind of stuff. We are currently still waiting for the final shipment of Rolling Realms to arrive. Currently, as far as I know, most shipments to fulfillment centers have arrived, but we're waiting for the shipment to our US fulfillment center here in St. Louis to arrive. And as far as I know, that shipment is currently waiting off the in near Seattle. I don't think it's been offloaded from the boat yet from Seattle, but once it is, it should be, I don't know, a few weeks is my hope before it gets to St. Louis. So we're still looking at a late September, early October pre-order for that because, as is our way, we don't like to run a pre-order until we actually have the items in stock. So you can get that shipping notice within a week or so after you actually place your order. Good morning, Tony. Thank you for joining me today and other people who are joining in. What else is going on today? I don't think I have a great chocolate of the day, actually. I am eating chocolate, dark chocolate covered almonds, so perhaps that will count as my chocolate of the day. But how are you indulging today? Are you indulging in any treats on this fine Wednesday? I say fine because the weather in St. Louis here is really, really nice right now. And we used that nice weather over the weekend to play disc golf a number of times. So much so that my elbow is hurting a little bit, but it's getting better now. But I think I played disc golf four times over 5 days over the long weekend. And I think started on Thursday, ended on Monday in terms of every day that I thought about playing or that I did play. And I had a great time, really, really great time, mostly with Megan and Miles. My friend Paul joined in a little bit too. And yeah, we had a great time playing some disc golf over the weekend. That was actually the main gaming that we did over the last week. We did have a virtual, what do we had an in-person game night on last Wednesday, a small one, where we played Dwellings of Eldervale. Had a great time playing Dwellings again. I played with the ogres this time. And then on Friday, we had a little virtual game night, date night with some friends, where we got on Board Game Arena and played Splendor and played Draftosaurus and played Can't Stop. And I had fun with all of them. I didn't win any of them. All these kind of these lighter games. Didn't win any of them, but I had a great time playing them. Carlos is here with a nice long comment. He says, "Oh yeah, we're coming up very close now to Stonemaier Games' 9th anniversary. It'll be on Friday. It was our 9th anniversary." And Carlos says he had a plan to celebrate the Stonemaier Games anniversary. He wanted to play all of it, the 9 Stonemaier games that he owns in the order I bought them to finish on the 10th. Unfortunately, a lot of unexpected events later. It seems like he won't be able to pull it off, but I'm sticking to the idea of playing them and sharing my love. That's awesome. Okay, so Carlos, I've seen your posts on Twitter about the games. I didn't realize you were actually playing them one tweet at a time, but that's really, really awesome. Thank you for doing that. I love that you're embracing our 9th anniversary in that way. Thank you. Carlos also has a question. He has kind of a spoiler question that he says is not a spoiler, but I'll read it out loud. He says, "You have stated that you want to revisit the 1920 plus world that was originally seen in the game Scythe. Have you settled on an idea of what kind of game it would be?" I'll say at this point that it's still a hope for me to make another game in the 1920 plus world that Scythe is based on. Yeah, that's as much as I'm ready to say right now about that. I'll say it's a hope. It's a hope. Yeah. Connor says, "Even though I can't see the full shirt, I wanted to get that Dune one too." Yeah, this is a I saw a friend wearing this Dune inspired shirt, and I had to get one. I really like it, kind of that this surfer look or feel. You know, I'm definitely not a surfer myself. Good morning, Justin. Thanks for joining us. Oh, Alex has a little update. Alex says the Rolling Realms boat docked in Seattle just this morning. So that's great news. That's awesome, Alex. Thanks for sharing that. And Alex is my coworker, director of sales here at Stonemaier Games. And he, because of his job talking to distributors and localization partners, he sees where all these shipments are around the world for our different fulfillment centers and distributors. We ship it to a lot directly to distributors now. But this Rolling Realms boat is specifically for the games of Rolling Realms that we want to fulfill to you. And One specific thing about that is sometimes when we do a pre-order, we have Panda, our manufacturer, pre-pack the games so that in boxes with bubble wrap, so that they are just ready for a shipping label to be slapped on the box and head out the door. Makes the process a lot faster on the back end, takes up a little more space in the pallet, but we've kind of mapped it out, and for the right games, it's often worth it, especially in terms of speed, because again, when you place the order, when you place a pre-order, we want to be able to ship it to you really, really quickly after that. And related to that, I actually just got a sample the other day from Panda for biodegradable bubble wrap, because in those pre-packed games, we use a lot of bubble wrap. So Panda, I'm kind of really leaning into this idea of biodegradable plastic when we need to use plastic, and bubble wrap is, I wouldn't say it's entirely necessary. You can wrap games in a kind of corrugated cardboard, which they are wrapped in, but also paper. You've probably seen Amazon and other shipping companies kind of crinkle up paper, put it around the games. But bubble wrap is really good at protecting games. And so we're looking into biodegradable solutions here. And these, I don't know the cost for this, but they seem pretty much just as good as any normal bubble wrap. So we're looking into that. We also had Panda. So Panda had an idea. Currently, the wood that Panda uses, or some of the wood that Panda uses, is pine from New Zealand. And Panda thought, okay, what if we look for pine from China as well? So we cut down on that environmental cost of transporting wood from New Zealand up to China. And so they sent me samples from a few of our games, from Scythe, and I believe Wingspan was in here. Maybe this is Viticulture. And some samples here, some wood samples, and they're entirely indistinguishable. I guess pine is just pine. I'm sure wood lovers, tree lovers might know some differences here, but I can't tell the difference between the wood. However, the big question that remains here is, I mean, China is a massive country in terms of scale, and so is it actually more fuel efficient to get the wood from wherever it's harvested in China over to Shenzhen to make our games? Or is it actually better to get it from New Zealand? And on top of that, we are looking now for all of our wood components to be FSC certified, or FSC materials. The C in FSC, I believe, stands for certified, which means that they certify that the forest, the way that the forestry happens, is sustainable. So I don't know all the details about how that works, but I think the basic idea is that you're cutting down trees in a way that replenishes those trees in an ongoing basis rather than just ravaging the land. And FSC is a way of ensuring that happens. So even if it comes down to being pretty close in terms of fuel efficiency between New Zealand and China, but one of those options is FSC, includes FSC materials, FSC forestry, and the other doesn't, we'll definitely go with the FSC option, because that is what we're moving towards for all of our wooden components in the future. And I'm mentioning all this is on my mind a lot lately, because last Thursday I posted an extensive list of the categories we're seeking for environmental sustainability for our games, while still meeting our goal of bringing joy to tabletops worldwide. That's our overarching goal, but I think in one section of that is being environmentally friendly, creating products that are sustainable, eco-friendly products. And if you look at the chart on our website, you'll see that we're not doing a great job at it. I think we're trying, but there are some pretty big hurdles, some pretty big barriers that we've faced over the last few years. And I really want to face those barriers head on now. And you can see in that chart, it's completely transparent. You can see what we're not doing well on that chart. You can also see some pleasant surprises. One of the things that surprised me is that I assumed we were using oil-based inks in our games, but we're not. We're actually using soy-based inks, which is more eco-friendly than oil-based inks. So that was one of the little surprises. You'll see some other pleasant surprises in the post, along with some not so good news about how we're doing so far. You can check that out on Thursday. I also posted on Monday a post that I was really excited to post, a guest post from a woman named Natasha, who originally emailed me after I posted a response to a Slate article about Wingspan. There's a paragraph in that article that I didn't think, that kind of painted Stonemaier Games as if we were exploiting Elizabeth Hargrave, which I don't think is the case at all. Even from the very beginning, I thought it was a mutually beneficial partnership with Elizabeth Hargrave. So I kind of shared some facts about that. And Natasha had also a different but interesting reaction to the Slate article in terms of how it portrayed games that women play or that women like. And Natasha wrote to me privately and said, Jamie, this just isn't my experience. And I feel like this type of generalization and stereotype really isn't good for women or for men, for any gender. And so she wrote an incredible, a brilliant guest post about looking at people as unique individuals rather than grouping them into things that all people of one gender like, or people of all race like this one thing. And it's a really great article. I highly recommend checking it out. This guest post that I posted on Monday from Natasha. That's some of the things I've been posting recently. Let me check over for questions real quick. I see some wonderful people are joining us. Some new faces. Always, if you're new to this live cast, feel free to chime in and say hi or ask a question. Anything goes here other than spoiler questions. Chris says, how's my dad and my cat's doing? Well, Walter's new thing, you can't see him right here. He is right down here under this table. This was a spot that Biddy discovered when we were out of town, and now Walter has completely taken over that spot. Biddy, meanwhile, is behind the curtain back there. So both cats are actually in my office right now, but you can't see them. And my dad is doing well. He just finished round three of chemo, and I talked to him on Sunday, and he sounded weak as one is when they're going through chemo, but in good spirits, excited to see his the cancerous tumor on his liver continuing to decrease in size. So yeah, we'll see what the next step is. That's the next step to see as he gets through this final round of chemo, and then to determine what the next step is. Amit says blog or YouTube channel. So the articles I've been talking about right now, I think that's what you're asking about, are on the Stillmeyer Games blog. On my YouTube channel, the Summer Games YouTube channel, what was the video I did this past week? I did videos yesterday about a game called Blabble, a limited communication cooperative game where each player speaks a different language. I did a video about My City, one of my recent favorite games, a fantastic game, My City that I played, or that Megan and I played over the last few weeks. Did a video about that. And on Sunday, I posted a video about Stellmeyer shareholders' favorite games. So Stillmeyer shareholder is someone who has invested money in Stillmeyer Games and owns a piece of Stillmeyer Games. And I surveyed them to see what some of their favorite games were in a variety of categories. So if you want to see the types of people, some of the people that influence Stillmeyer Games, what their favorite games are, you can check out that video on Sunday on my YouTube channel. This past Sunday, it's live right now. You can check that out. Yesterday, I filmed three videos for future Sunday videos where I went through my closet of secrets back here and I found old samples from a lot of different products that we worked on. In particular, I found a lot from Rolling Realms, Red Rising, and My Little Scythe. So, two fairly recent games and one not so recent game, but a fairly recent expansion. And I kind of just, I had some requests recently to do more design diary style posts about Stillmeyer Games products. And I have those posts on our website, so I didn't want to just repeat them in a video. So instead, I dug through all these old components and kind of had these tales from production stories about these games, where I went through each of these games and talked about, here's this component that we considered, and here's how it evolved over time into the final version of it. So I'm excited to share those videos probably in a few weeks. I'm a little bit ahead of schedule on my long form Sunday videos. But they were fun to do. Hi, Tim. Thanks for joining us from Scotland. Here's Justin from Room 51. He says, your tips have helped me create an epic dragon encounter for my D&D campaign. Oh, cool. Yeah, Justin asked about dragon encounters a few weeks ago. He says, what would your advice be to follow up on a climactic encounter like that from a game designer perspective? Oh, that's interesting. Well, two things come to mind, Justin. And again, I don't know D&D, so I think you're going to create a much better experience than any answer I can give here for D&D. But one thing I like to do when I have encounters is to have consequences from that encounter. So it's not just a momentary thing, but there are consequences that even if it's a small mechanical boost, whether it's an ongoing boost or detriment or just a one-time benefit that has ongoing consequences, I think those consequences that gives that adds a memorable aspect to that encounter because you're like, okay, this thing that I have to deal with now, or this benefit that I now have, is the result of what I did, the choice that I made with this dragon. So there's that. And one thing I've seen some games do also is to add some sort of characteristic to the story or the character, a keyword or something that helps you remember that this thing happened. So, like, say you slayed the dragon, you might one of your characters might append to their name the word Dragon Slayer. And so from then on, they're kind of reminded when they look down at their character sheet that they're the Dragon Slayer because they are the one that slayed the dragon. Or if they're the peacemaker, if they made peace with the dragon, then that, if just putting that word down somewhere, writing that word down, this is particularly good for like legacy style games, which D&D is essentially a legacy style game. Because you can just write something down. I think that can have a nice memorable impact on it. I'm curious, Justin, if you feel like sharing what you did with the dragon, how you approached it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you approached this dragon. Because I think my original thought, I don't want to say advice, but my original thought was, I like it when you have more choices when you encounter a big monster other than just kill the monster. Like I like if you can evade around the monster, if you can answer a riddle from the monster, if you can befriend it even, if you can bribe it. So have all these other options other than just let's fight this thing that looks evil. Yeah. James also asked about the cats. James, I might be behind on that question, but I mentioned that both cats are hiding in this room right now. Biddy's behind this curtain over here, and Walter is right behind me here underneath my printer desk over here, my printer table. Christopher's joining us from France, sunny France. I'm glad the weather's nice there right now. Dusty here from the mill. He says, "Are you psyched for the Stonemaier Games Design Day this weekend?" I am, yes. So every year we host an annual event, mostly a playtesting event, but we also just get together with people and play games. And that event is coming up this weekend. It's Stonemaier Games Design Day at Pieces Cafe here in St. Louis. It is not an open event. It's also not a private event, but it is an event where you would have had to already sign up for it. So I'm sharing this not to make anyone jealous or want to schedule anything at the last minute, but if you are interested in the design day, we'll have one next year. We'll have one in the future. And we are, I think, taking a pretty responsible and safe approach to this event in that you must be vaccinated to attend. We've asked all attendees to wear masks in public spaces, which hopefully people are already doing, but we're very specific about it. Wear masks in public spaces for 9 days leading up to the event. And we are making it a mask mandatory event when we're not eating or drinking. So it is an all-day event, so there will be moments where people have to eat or drink. And hopefully the weather will be really nice and we can do a lot of that outside. But the rule right now in St. Louis, the law right now is that you have to wear a mask if you're in indoor private space. So or indoor public space, like a restaurant or a bar. Public, private, I guess they're kind of a little bit of a mix between the two. But the point is, everyone will be wearing masks throughout the event. And I think we're approaching it in a pretty safe, responsible manner. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing people there, to playing some games, to watching people play test their games. That's always a joy for me to see all the innovative ideas and approaches to games that people are bringing to the table. And Dusty, it'd be great to see you there. I don't think we've actually ever met in person, have we, Dusty? Correct me if I'm wrong about that, but this might be the first time that we ever meet. Unless that there was a meeting at a Gen Con or something I'm forgetting. There's probably something obvious I'm forgetting here, but I don't remember it. So I'm looking forward to probably meeting you for the first time. Ruby has kind of a spoiler question, but I'll answer it in a non-spoiler way. She says, "Will, oh, I see." She's asking about reprints, not spoiler question. She says, "Will all of Wingspan and the expansions be available again soon?" So she's asking about Wingspan, the European expansion, and Oceania. I think unless we unexpectedly sold out, I will check to see if that's the case on our website. Or not unexpectedly, Wingspan has been selling well on our web store. Let's see, is Wingspan out of stock? No, we still have Wingspan in stock on our web store. But the European expansion and Oceania are out of stock. We are waiting for a shipment to arrive. Hopefully it will be sometime in September. Yeah, just been trying to be very patient with freight shipping these days. James has a spoiler question about the next viticulture expansion. I appreciate the curiosity, but I don't answer spoiler stuff here. So spoiler stuff today would be anything about the tapestry expansion or the viticulture expansion or the next things for Wingspan. Yeah. Steven says he wishes he could be not in the UK for the design weekend. Any chance you would ever do one over here? I appreciate you asking about that, Stephen. That would be really cool to do someday. And I shouldn't say no. It would be really, really neat to do that someday. One of the nice things about the Design Day event, even though I know Joe puts a lot of work into running it, is that Pieces makes it super, super easy for us to have this event. They have the space, they do the setup, they do the cleanup, they have the food, they have the drinks. And so we, on the day of, we pretty much just show up and have the event. And so having it anywhere other than Pieces, which is 15 minutes away from here, is a big task to handle. Whereas Pieces makes it so easy. So I'm hesitant to do it anywhere else because yeah, it would be a lot more work anywhere else is basically what I'm getting at. But maybe it would be worth it to see a whole different spectrum of people that we don't normally don't get to see at Design Day. Let's see. Kevin says, is there a game mechanism that you pioneered in your games that were either never used or underutilized in other games? That I pioneered that were either never used or underutilized in other games. I mean, I actually, so Kevin, one thing you might check out here is I have a video about my favorite mechanisms in each of Stonemaier, in each of the Stonemaier games. And I'm trying to remember anything offhand. So I think there's innovation, like the bumping mechanism in Euphoria, the worker bumping mechanism. I don't think I'd seen that before. The Grande worker in Viticulture, I don't think I'd seen that before. Inside the upgrade system, where you're picking up a cube and making a benefit better and making a cost lower, I don't think I'd seen exactly that. I'd seen some variations on cubes on mats, things like that, but not exactly that. I would hope that in every one of our games, there's something innovative that hasn't been used before. Even in Rolling Realms, I think it's pretty unique that every round you have a unique combination of three cards, three realm cards that you're using for that round. So, unlike in most Roll and Write games, where the only element of variability is the input, like the dice that you're rolling, the cards that you're flipping, but the thing that you're writing on stays the same. Rolling Realms, that changes from round to round. So it's not like a revolutionary mechanic, but I think it adds a ton of replayability to the game. So yeah, check out that video if you can find it on our YouTube channel. Christopher says, my crowdfunding book helped me towards funding his first Kickstarter. Congratulations, Christopher. That's awesome to hear. He says he still learned tons during the campaign. Yeah, the best way to learn how to do a Kickstarter is to actually try to do it. And he says, 35 days is madness. Yes. You definitely didn't see that in my book, hopefully, unless I put that in my book that 35 days is feasible. But I recommend, I don't know, somewhere between maybe 30 days for the first campaign, between maybe 25 and 30 days, and then go down to like 18 to 25 days for a repeat campaign. He says he had so many, 70 plus updates during the campaign. That is quite a few. Julia, thanks for joining us. She says, not the first time, but hello. Maybe the first time that you've said hello. She says that she's playing My City with her family. So that's one of the games that I talked about in a video last week and had a really great time with it, with My City. A lot of fun from Reiner Knizia. Julia is also excited about the sustainable game production ideas that we are pursuing. Amit says, thanks for the information about the blog and the YouTube channel of the company. Do I prefer reading blogs, watching YouTube when it comes to board games? I actually like both. I like a little bit of both. So I use a service called Feedly that is an RSS service that just collects blogs, new blog posts from everywhere, from anywhere that has an RSS feed. I really like that. I really like that a lot. So I do like reading content, looking at photos of games and reading the content related to those photos. And not just games, other topics too. I also really like videos, and I like podcasts. So I would say most of my board game content comes from videos and comes from written blogs. And there are a few podcasts that I really love that I follow on a regular basis. I often listen to when I run. Like I just finished listening to an episode of the Co-op Cast today. Co-op Cast is fantastic. If you're interested in cooperative games or cooperative game design, it's a must subscribe, a must listen to. They have a couple of different names. They go by the Co-op Cast and also the One Stop Co-op Shop. Same thing. Chad says, have I been watching Ted Lasso on Apple TV? Yeah, I love Ted Lasso. I really love it. Yeah, just the human element, how touching it is, and the soccer or football. Yeah, I really, really love that show. And it ends up being kind of often a tearjerker lunchtime show for me. But yeah, That's fine. Once a week, get a good cry in over lunch. That Ted Lasso will do that to you. Tony says, "Did I see Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings this past week? And I thought it was wonderful." I did not see it because I don't know. I love watching movies in theaters, but I'm just not ready to do that in this pandemic world. Even being fully vaccinated, just not ready to go there. But I really wanted to see it. Tony, I'm glad you enjoyed watching it. And I can't wait to see it. So, yeah, we might wait until it's kind of on the tail end of its theatrical run and then jump in and see it at maybe a daytime show when hardly anyone else is there. That's the approach that we're thinking about for it. Nathan says, a question and a comment about the Stonemaier Games submission page. On the page, you mentioned that you would prefer a 5 to 10 minute walkthrough video. However, I know from personal experience that the submitted video may never be viewed. Shouldn't you mention that when a designer fills out the form? Yeah, that's a great point, Nathan. I'll have to look at the clarity on that. So the steps for submitting a game to us are, first step, fill out the form. And then if we expressed interest, to have a 5 to 10 minute video. So if it's not clear on that page, then I definitely need to make that clear. I thought it was. I thought it was clear that the first step was just fill out the form. You don't need a video, but I will definitely clarify that on the submission page. Thanks for asking about that. I would say in general though that even if the publisher doesn't view the video, I still think it can be helpful to spend 5 or 10 minutes. Going through the core gameplay elements because you might realize that you can't explain the core gameplay elements in 5 or 10 minutes. And that is a little bit of a red flag, I think, that if your game takes 30 minutes to explain, that's going to be a problem for any publisher. So just going through that process of highlighting the elements of a game to someone and what a few turns looks like in a game, I think can be illuminating for the design process. But I totally see your point that, that you don't want to invest a lot of time in making a video and then not have a publisher actually watch it. Yeah. Gerald says, what do I think of Portal's new football soccer game 11? It's on GameFound, not Kickstarter. I haven't checked that out. I will have to check that out. Sports themed games take a lot to actually intrigue me, but yeah, I'm curious about it. I'll take a look. So Justin had the question about dragons, how to use dragons in a D&D campaign. Or a specific dragon encounter. And I asked him what he ended up doing with his dragon. So here's his answer. He says, since I knew my players were pretty set on killing the dragon, I gave them tools within the lair for them to have options on how they want to approach the encounter. That's cool that you still gave them options, even though that was what they really wanted to do with that dragon. Also, instead of walking them into the room and immediately have combat ensuing, they had a conversation where they can try to gain info from the dragon and set themselves for combat. Yeah, so that's kind of the smog approach to dragons, right? Where eventually you know you're probably going to be fighting and killing this dragon, but along the way, you can learn some new information. That's awesome, Justin. I'm glad that worked out. I hope people had fun with it. Daniel's joining us from Thailand. Welcome, Daniel. Scott in Central Canada. Matt says, when you publish games from other designers, would it be possible to have them guest appear on a weekly live cast? There's probably a streaming service that lets me connect another person. In fact, StreamYard, I think, does that. Can connect another person on screen on Facebook Live. I'm here literally just on Facebook Live. I'm not using a secondary service or anything like that. So, yeah, it's very easy for me to pop on and do this. I think it's probably more likely that that I could have a designer appear on a recorded video. But I talked about this recently on my YouTube channel. One of the joys for me of the YouTube channel where I talk about game design is that the only schedule I need to worry about is my own. And so I usually set aside a bunch of time on Tuesdays to film videos. But if something comes up on the Tuesday, I prioritize that, and then eventually on Tuesdays, I'll get to the video. And so once I add a scheduling element for another designer, it complicates things because then I have to have to respect their schedule, they have to respect my schedule, and then I have that thing on my schedule where I know I have to do this thing at this specific time. It takes away flexibility. And so it's a little thing, but it actually does add up, and I would say it takes away a little bit from the quality of life of my job and of making videos in general. However, I do try to get designers to, if, when I work with a co-designer or an outside designer, an independent designer, I try to encourage them to write down their story of designing the game, and I use that information in our written design diary post. And in the future, I might make some more videos by that. But I do know you probably get tired of seeing me talk about games when other people could talk about, other designers that we work with could talk about their games. So maybe in certain points in the future, I might have a designer do the live cast instead of me. Or if they are in St. Louis, which is very rare, but sometimes they are, I could have them join me for a live cast on a Wednesday like this. Yeah, it's just the technology element of having another designer join me remotely is complicated, adds complexity. Yeah. George says, according to my chart from the table, Charterstone is the most eco-friendly, sustainable Stonemaier games produced at the moment. Except that Charterstone is the one game with disposable components, so that there is a negative mark in Charterstone right now. Yeah, so that was a little bit of a knock for Charterstone, but yeah. Technically, I think it is maybe the most eco-friendly game right now. Tim says, Soulforge Fusion is live on Kickstarter. What are your thoughts on the hybrid deck-building game concept? I thought it was really interesting, Tim. And I'm tempted to back it. We will see if I back it. My only hesitation came from, I talked to some of the people that I probably would play that style of game with, and they were a little hesitant about it. They wanted to see how it turned out. So I only wanted to back it if I had someone to play this dueling two-player game with. But I really like the idea, the Keyforge idea of having uniquely printed cards, uniquely printed and composed decks. I think that's really cool. And I think it's a brilliant innovation on that mechanism to, instead of giving you one unique deck, that you have two and you shuffle them together. That way you can have a little bit of deck building creativity where you're not changing this deck, you're not changing this deck, but you are choosing which deck to combine with this deck as you mash them together. So I think that's really cool. I think there's a really, really cool innovation on the system. Allie says, I may have missed this, joining a little late, but any update on the Android version of Wingspan? Yeah, Allie, I appreciate you asking, but I have no idea how the anything that you know is the same thing I know about the digital version from Monster Couch. So I've learned from Monster Couch to essentially wait until they officially announce something, and that's when it is a reality. They have given me estimates in the past, but those estimates end up meaning very little. So I don't know, but I know they're actively working on it, and I don't know when they'll announce it. Keith is here from Thunderworks Games. Hey Keith, I hope you're doing well. He says, someone probably asked this in the past, but do you see someone making a significant investment to establish a high quality manufacturer in the US as a result of the freight changes in the last year? Keith, I honestly think the first step will be US assembly, but not US manufacturing. That is my guess right now. So assembly, not manufacturing. And I think that might be, if that works out, I think we may then see a next step at being some level of manufacturing in the US. But a significant investment, yeah, it's I think the big challenge, Keith, is that there are so many specialized factories in China that make like one specific component, one specific type of component, and they just don't seem to exist, at least at scale, in the US. And so inevitably, it seems like you're going to have to be pulling some components from China, and maybe that's what just needs to happen. Maybe that's one of the other next steps, a hybrid version, which I think we've seen Ludofact do a little bit with their Indiana facility, I believe, where they make some of the components here, but some of the components they fly in or ship in from China. I also think that the freight shipping prices will eventually settle down, not to the original prices. I think they'll end up probably being double what they originally were, but I don't think they'll level out at quadruple what they were in the past. In fact, one of the things that I would love to explore in the game industry is to have the game industry as a whole charter a ship, just have a ship or multiple ships that we use specifically for games and that we control the price on for that ship so it doesn't overinflate or get out of control. I think that's a little bit of a pipe dream to have something that big because these ships are massive and massively expensive, but that would be really cool to have in the game industry. Chad says, how many of your devices have a Jakub Rozalski wallpaper? I don't think I have any digital devices that have wallpaper, but I do. Jakub was very kind to send me two prints that I have in my wall, hanging on my wall over here, of pretty amazing illustrations from Scythe that he sent me after the original Kickstarter campaign. So that was very kind of Jakub to send. I have those two on my wall. So I actually have literal wallpaper on my wall of Jakub's work. Daniel says he's about to start his first crowdfunding campaign, and I'm hesitant between getting distribution partners before sending the prototypes to some reviewers. Do you suggest any particular order of doing things? If you haven't started your crowdfunding campaign yet, I wouldn't really worry about distribution partners at all at this point because you don't really know if it'll exist yet. I think a much bigger focus, much bigger priority should be on getting some games, some prototypes to reviewers, not distributors. So I honestly wouldn't think about distributors at all at this point. I don't know, in the back of your head you can think about it, but not getting them games. I wouldn't go that far yet. Just right now getting some unbiased third-party reviews for those games, I think is pretty important for the success of your campaign. Scott says, do I have any plans for a fully cooperative game? Yeah, Scott, I've been working on a fully cooperative game for a couple years now. This is the open world adventure cooperative game that I've been working on for quite some time. So I am working on one, but it still needs, it's a very, very big game, so it's still gonna take some time before it's ready. I'm having fun with it though. It's fun to design a cooperative game for once. Dusty reminds me that we did actually meet at Gen Con. Okay, Dusty, I'm glad your memory is better than mine. He says, actually bumped into you in the second day by the elevators in the hotel. You have a very specific memory of this, and you greeted me by name. I would hope so. I do recognize you, Dusty. He says, I'm looking forward to design day two. He's bring the Sharpie though, because my son is going to want something Tapestry signed. It's his favorite game. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I that's a good reminder. I will have a Sharpie ready to sign things at design day. Julia says, what is your game design YouTube channel called? I've never seen that. If you go to Stillmire Games, it's probably the easiest way to find it is to go to stillmiregames.com and look under, I believe it's under news. Yeah, news, and then YouTube channel is right up there near the top. You can also search for My Favorite Game Mechanism or search for Jamie Stegmeier on YouTube, and it should pop up that way. I don't think it's exactly under Stillmire Games, but whatever pops up, if you try a few different searches, you will see my face on it, I think you'll know it's my channel. Tom says, what is the Stillmire Games product schedule looking like for 2022? From the newsletter, it looks like two new games and two expansions. That's the plan. Yeah, that's what we're hoping for in 2022. It's hard to say right now with freight shipping, and some of those products aren't finished yet. A few of them are finished; they're in production right now, but a few of them aren't. You never know what's going to happen with how a design goes, or how freight shipping is going to go. So that's the plan, but don't hold me to it. We're just going to do our best to make the best version of our products and to get them to you in a timely manner. What are some other topics I was going to cover today? I've covered a lot of things. I did some videos about my closet of secrets back there. I played a lot of disc golf over the weekend, spending some good time, some quality time on game design after the second wave of feedback came in for a product that I'm working on. So that's what's been occupying my time. I had a very busy day yesterday with the videos and some other things going on at Stillmire Games. Sean says, would you recommend trying crowdfunding for more gaming accessories? So I think, Sean, I think you're asking if you are a game accessory creator or company, would I recommend crowdfunding? I think it depends. That's a good question because I've seen people on Etsy. I think it depends on how many you want to make. So if you want to craft something by hand, which I think, Sean, is one of your skill sets, crafting things by hand, I think Etsy is probably the way to go because you're kind of making things one product at a time and even sometimes customizing them. I think Etsy is great for that. For crowdfunding is really good if you need to make something at scale because often then there is a minimum threshold, an MOQ, a minimum production quantity that you need to make. Before you can feasibly make it at all. So you're kind of saying, here's this thing that I want to make a lot of. And for me to make even one copy of it, I need to make 100 copies of it. So that's your kind of your funding goal on Kickstarter. So I think Kickstarter is really good for that purpose. But or crowdfunding Kickstarter, whatever, Game Pound, crowdfunding game on tabletop. But I think Etsy is better if it's bespoke, if you're just making things one at a time. And there is no magical threshold that you need to get over to justify making that first unit. Scott says, do I have a favorite two-player game that I've been playing a lot recently? He says his youngest and I have been playing a lot of Azul and Backgammon. So from your answer, Scott, I think you're including two-player only games and games that that can play it at higher player counts too. And I'd go back to My City actually. Julia mentioned that she's playing My City. Megan and I played through the entire My City campaign in the course of a little over a week. We really got hooked on it. So I would highly recommend My City at two players. And one of the nice things about playing My City at two players is that when you're done, you can then either play, it's a 2 to 4 player game. You can then play an entire other campaign, it's an entire second campaign with two players again, or you can give it to friends like we did, and they can play a two-player game themselves through the entire two-player campaign through My City. It also has an eternal mode, so it is a fully replayable game, even with or without, even if you haven't played any of the legacy stuff. It is just a two-player game that you can play. Lisa says, I bought Wingspan. I should be distracted today because I have my email over here on the left. I shouldn't. I'll close that so I won't be distracted by that anymore. Lisa says, I brought Wingspan into the store for a Labor Day board game event and thought, I want the Wingspan big box. Now, yeah, I feel you, Lisa. I know it's awkward to transport right now if you have all the Wingspan stuff. What is the release date goal for that one? Well, originally, it was going to be in the spring. Like, we're pretty much ready to go on the Wingspan big box. I'm waiting on one final sample to check out for some of the trays to make a decision about the trays, but it's pretty much ready to go. But with freight shipping the way it is not feasible for us to even make it right now because it would, I think you may have heard me mention this, it would literally call, if we wanted to ship the Wingspan nesting box right now, freight shipping alone would cost $20 per box. And that is a huge cost. So that's not manufacturing cost. That's not fulfillment cost to get the game from our fulfillment center to you. That is just the freight shipping cost. And so the method that I didn't really want to do, but I think that we have to do now is to combine it with the next Wingspan expansion. So you'll still be able to buy it separately, and you'll be able to buy the expansion separately, but there will be the option to buy the Wingspan nesting box with the new expansion inside the box. And so that means the nesting box is dependent on the next expansion being ready. And I don't know when that is. So it's that I don't know the date, but that's the thought process that I'm going through for when it will be ready. Or if all of a sudden freight shipping prices drop by quite a bit, then we will enter production right away on the Wingspan nesting box and hope that those prices stay down. Alex says, what do I think makes a good co-op game? I have some videos on this on my YouTube channel, Alex, where I talk about my favorite cooperative games and what makes them my favorite cooperative games. I'll throw out a few elements off the cuff. One of my favorite aspects of cooperative games is limited communication, where it thematically makes sense. So there are cooperative games that say like, hey, you have this hand of cards, but you can't tell anyone what's in it, even though there's no thematic or mechanical reason for you not to do that. But then you have a game like Hanabi, where your limited communication is literally in the game itself, where you're holding a hand of cards where you can't see your cards, but you can see everyone else's cards. So the limited communication is part of the core mechanism of the game. It's not something artificial that you're putting in there. So I think that's really, really helpful. And that limited communication helps in a number of other ways, both in terms of how you're thematically immersed in the game, the puzzle of the game, and preventing there from being an alpha player or a quarterback in the game that is just telling everyone what to do. I'll mention that because I think that can expand into so many different areas of cooperative games. And I have a list about that, a couple different lists. I have a list about cooperative games that prevent quarterbacking or alpha players. And I have a video, a list about my favorite limited communication cooperative games if you want to check that out. The Crew is one of my recent favorites in that category. Tim says, what do I use when I travel with games? He says, right now he uses blue IKEA bags. When I travel with games, I don't know, I take it to, I guess, I think of traveling as going to someone else's game night with games. When I really travel, like on a plane or in a car I have a lot of flexibility, in a plane I have very little flexibility. But when I take games to a friend's house, it depends on how many games I'm taking. Sometimes I'll have just a kind of a canvas gaming bag or grocery bag that I take. And I also have a big canvas bag, big sturdy canvas bag that can actually zip up that I take that my mom made or my mom embroidered. She bought and gave to me. That Walter is sleeping on right now and getting his cat hair on it. But I use that for games as well. If I want to bring a lot of games, or if it's raining, then I want to zip those games up and not get them wet. It's a really nice bag. I'd show it to you, but again, Walter is on it. My cat is on it right now. Daniel says, thanks for my explanation on reviewers versus distributors. He says, living in Asia and being born in Europe, the American market is so big that I find it hard to get reviewers to cover it properly. Do you know about any companies that help out on finding these professional reviewers? Companies. I mean, there are some companies, I'm blanking on the name right now, There are some marketing companies that will recommend some reviewers to check out. You're right, there are a lot of reviewers though. I would recommend going to the list of reviewers that I offer on our website because they are vetted in one specific way, which is that any of the reviewers that I put on the list on our website, I believe it's called the current state of Stellar Games and reviewers, the current set of reviewers. Actually, I probably have it right here. It's the, what is it called? Our current approach to board game reviewers and content creators. I'll post a link here so you can check it out. It links to a Google Doc that shows a bunch of different reviewers, and the vetted aspect of them is that these are all reviewers that, if they accept a review copy, they have a history of actually reviewing that game. Because unfortunately, there are many reviewers that don't actually end up doing that for various reasons. And so this is a vetted list for that one reason. That is the only qualification for that list, that these reviewers are those who, when they have accepted games from Stillmeyer Games for review, that they have actually reviewed them within a few months. Which I try to be pretty flexible about that. So there's a big list there. It does take work, but part of the work is that's part of the work of running the campaign of finding reviewers who are willing to check out your game for Kickstarter or crowdfunding, however you want to crowdfund. One other thing that you can do is if you've designed a game, if you've been working on a game, that you have consumed a number of reviews about other games, and hopefully along the way you found some favorite reviewers of yours, even some favorites that focus on Kickstarter prototypes. And if that's the case, reach out to some of those favorites. Like I think it goes a long way when a reviewer hears from you saying, "Hey, I've been following your channel for a couple of years now. I love your work. I have a game that I've been working on." I think that personal touch means a lot to reviewers, especially if it's genuine. Christopher says, if you had to give three top tips for someone who is looking very soon to leave their regular paid job and go into game publishing, what would they be? I do have an article about that too, about some things that I thought about as I was transitioning from a full-time job back in 2013 to being full-time at Stellar Games. And the first piece of advice I would say is don't do it. It's kind of the opposite of what Daniel said. I would say don't do it. As long as possible. So don't quit your day job as long as possible, because that is your security blanket in a way. It means that the decisions you make for your game company or as a game designer aren't dependent on money. They're not focused on money. They can be focused on a bigger goal, bringing joy to people, or having fun yourself. Once money becomes a big part of that equation, or the biggest part of that equation, things can change a little bit. Your decisions can change. So I would say hold off as long as possible, even if it means going part-time at your normal job and then working on your game company part-time as well. So that's the number one thing that I would say. The other piece of advice that I posted on the blog are more about like working for yourself at home, like working from home, and how to have a good work-life balance. Yeah, you can check out the articles on that. There's some articles on the website. I don't remember the exact advice that I gave then because it's been a pretty long time now since I made that transition. But if you look at, I think you'll find the articles. If you look on the Kickstarter lessons chronological list on my blog on Stellar Games and search for the word quit, because I think the article's named something like Don't Quit Your Day Job. It's that article and some articles around it that deal with the aspect of transitioning from a full-time job to a full-time job running your company, your game company. David says he's been wanting to ask this for a while. What do I call the action mechanism in Tapestry? He says, I'm designing a game with a similar mechanism, but I'm having trouble coming up with a good term for reference. I've used action tracks, but I'm not too happy with it. It's a good question, David. As someone earlier asked for unique mechanisms. I don't know if the Tapestry mechanism is entirely unique, but I really like the core system that at any given time you have four actions available to you based on your position on four different tracks. So you look at a track and you know your next action, you know the benefit of the next action, and you know the cost of the next action on that track. I kind of like action tracks. I know you said you weren't too happy with that term, David, but action tracks is kind of what it is. They're different tracks with actions on them. Yeah, kind of like action tracks. Maybe there's something else. If someone else has a recommendation for what that mechanism should be called in Tapestry, let me know. The closest other game I can think of that has something like it is actually no. It is kind of a well, There are games that have one-way action selection tracks. That's another long way of saying it. But they are games more like Tokaido, where you can choose as far as you want to jump forward on that track, but you're always going one way. You can't backtrack and take actions in the past. So Tapestry is kind of like that, but you can't jump forward in Tapestry. But it's pretty similar. One-way action selection tracks is in the realm of it, I think. Dusty says, and I'm very curious to see what you come up with, David, because I do like that mechanism in Tapestry quite a bit. Dusty says, I'm sure some of the stuff that you get in prototypes doesn't end up making it into the final game. What do I do with those prototypes? For example, is there a scythe board with squares instead of hexes or an alternative mech that didn't end up making the cut? That would make for a fun blog post. I do, and a lot of that is in the design diary post, Dusty, maybe not as much as I'd hope. A lot of that material just gets recycled after I'm done with the prototype. I found that out when I was going through my closet of secrets for the videos I filmed yesterday. A lot of the things that I retain are components that we tested that ended up evolving over time. So I end up keeping those samples for longer than I should. I don't really need those samples for that long. But the prototypes often just get recycled, and hopefully I've taken photos of them so I can share them on blog posts in the future. And I have in many of the design diary posts. Okay, so Christopher's going to look up the articles about quitting. Connor mentioned Action Tree. I like Action Tree or Tech Tree. In fact, Tapestry started out very much as a tech tree game of branching paths. But I think the word tree insinuates branching. And at least in Tapestry, there is no branching. You are choosing, there is no choice. The choice is which track, not which action on which track. Action Tree, track advancement is, let's see. Tim says they're called advancement tracks. That's true. They are just called advancement tracks, and you are advancing on them. Michael says track advancement. So I could see those terms working as well. Tony's talking about unique mechanisms, and he says the multiple sand timers and pendulum is pretty unique too. I agree. Yeah, that is a really cool mechanism. The different lengths of the timers and how those timers are used in pendulum, I think, is really, really cool. Carlos says, related to the one-way action selection tracks on Tapestry, I not only love that you have four actions, but the timing is really important. Sometimes you really want to hold on advancing that track so that a condition is met and then you unleash a combo of actions. It feels so good. Thanks, Carlos. I really appreciate your enthusiasm for Tapestry. And you're right. Yeah, that was something I was aiming for. The best option isn't always just to advance on the track that you've been focusing on or the track that you're furthest on along, because that next step might. The next benefit might be better if used at the exact right time as it relates to another track or one of your income moments or income decisions in the game, or even the resources that you have handy at that specific time. Yeah. So I'll recap. It looks like I'm caught up on questions here. So I'll recap what I talked about today a little bit. Did a blog post last week about the eco-friendliness or lack thereof of some of our games and how we're working on that. Did a blog post, a guest post this Monday about gender, perception of gender stereotypes in gaming. That was a guest post, not written by me. And I did a video on Sunday about some of our shareholders' favorite games in a variety of categories. I've been working a lot on game design here at Stonemaier Games recently. That's been a lot of my job. Although it's hard for me to even encapsulate what I do every day. Some of it is content creation, like the blog posts, the videos, things like that. But a lot of it is just like random emails that come up that I need to deal with. So I guess I put it under the project management category. But when I think about things of like sharing to you, like what I'm working on right now, so much of it falls into that category that it's not particularly exciting to share. It's not even that distinctive to share. It's just the things that I do use it over email every day and using my long checklist of things that I have to do for every product that we release, which is project management. I've been doing that a lot. Our design day is this weekend, Stonemaier Games Design Day. We had a virtual one last year, so this will be the first time in 2 years that we've done it in person. And as I mentioned earlier, I played a lot of disc golf over the weekend. Daniel says, "Does Stonemaier Games consider exclusive distributions or a partial market distribution aligning with my company's strategy?" Sorry for the heavy questions. So that's a great question, Daniel, because one of our core philosophies is to not do exclusive anything. We want to find ways to include people, and whenever we see that word exclusive, it probably means that we're not meeting that philosophy. However, we have found in certain regions it is better for us to work with a specific partner, because they can actually serve all the customers better in that region than if we were selling to multiple distributors. We generally try to stay away from doing this, but we have started doing it in a few specific regions, or at least we're testing it. We're doing it on a trial basis, which is my recommendation to you if you're thinking about that, that you do it on a trial basis, that you're not locked in for longer than a year, really, because you might find that one partner isn't accomplishing that goal. They're not serving the customers as well as they could in that region, and you need that out. You need that out to get out and not have an exclusive agreement or to find a better partner in that region. Tony says, someone mentioned something about game boards, and it made me think, what is your feeling about game expansions that feature additional boards that sit next to the original? Is that a game feature you are not attracted to? You know, I actually think it's often pretty clever. I think I first saw it, I believe, in the game Village, where Village added a board that I believe overlaid on top of the board. Maybe it extended outward a little bit. And I was like, I really like how clever that is that they extended the board. Same with Draftosaurus. I haven't played the expansion, but Draftosaurus, I think, has a board that extends from the original board. We did it with the player mats, the vineyard mats in Viticulture. And I think that's, I think in general, I kind of like it, as long as table space is accounted for in that decision, because table space is such a premium for certain games that, that if you've added something that makes table space just if it completely changes how you can put the game on the table, that can be a problem. That's my main consideration. Sean pointed out that sometimes I do respond to customer emails too. Yeah, if a customer emails me, I try to respond to it. Or if it's more in Joe's realm, because Joe is the director of communications, his main job is talking to customers and helping customers. I might forward it to him. But yeah, I'm always happy to hear from customers. Kurt says, what do I think of the Artemis project and the new Kickstarter game, Artemis Odyssey? I did watch a video on Board Game Co. about Artemis Odyssey yesterday. It looked interesting to have a game in the same world as Artemis Project, but I haven't played Artemis Project yet, and I really want to. I'm hoping to play it at Geekway in early October to get that game a try, because I've heard great things about it. Would you recommend it, Kurt? Have you played Artemis Project? Well, Michael says he has a scythe tattoo on his arm that he'd love to show off. Where can I send a picture of it? I would say the best place, Michael. I mean, you can send it to me if you want, but if you want to show it off, I would post it in the Scythe Facebook group and maybe tag me in the post so I can have my attention drawn to it. That's awesome that you got that. And yeah, I'd absolutely love to hear it, love to see it in the Scythe Facebook group. Scott says Raiders of the North Sea adds additional boards and players, so more action spaces for increased player counts. Yeah, that's a good example of a game that adds a board that seamlessly integrates with the art and the mechanisms of the original game. Raiders of the North Sea does that really well. Tim says he would also love to get a Stonemaier-related tattoo. He says he has a cardinal for his mom, but it also comes from my love of Wingspan. Oh, that's lovely that you have that overlap between the two. Always appreciate the wonderful art. Yeah, we're so lucky to work with Natalia and Anna, who have made all of the bird art for Wingspan. They've made, over 300 bird illustrations at this point, and they spend around a dozen hours on every bird. It's such a detailed process that Natalia and Anna just do incredible work. And I that's really cool that you have a bird tattoo, Tim. I don't have any tattoos. If anyone's wondering that, I do not have any tattoos. I don't have any plans to get them. The idea of something permanent is something that I stay away from. But it's cool that those of you have gotten game related tattoos. In fact, I'm wondering, as you're watching this, whether it's now or on YouTube later after I post this, if you have a tattoo, is it a gaming related tattoo? Do you have a gaming related tattoo? Or do you think someday you might get a gaming related tattoo? Kurt says he loves dice management games. I asked Kurt if he enjoys Artemis Project, and he says his brother, a huge gamer, says I should play it and own it as a great dice management game. So Kurt hasn't played it yet, but has heard good things about Artemis Project. All right, we're right at 11 a.m. here in St. Louis now, which is time for me to take care of a few emails and then go make lunch. But thank you so much for joining me today. I will post this on YouTube in case you have any questions that arise after you see this video, whether it's on Facebook Live or on YouTube. YouTube is the place to post questions after I'm not live anymore. And I will see you next Wednesday. All right, take care. Bye.